Okay, there we go. Some people were mentioning they didn't get any stuff last week, and that's because I didn't send anything out last week. So I was taking a little bit of time off. I had hernia surgery last Monday, so I was a little bit I was recuperating, let me put it that way. So I'm back. So you should get something this week. But I apologize for those of you who might have been looking for something and couldn't find it because it wasn't there to begin with. Anyhow, welcome this morning. And as we usually do on Sunday mornings, let's take a moment. Get a sense of our connection with one another. All beings who are yearning for peace, for oneness. And know that even the smallest efforts in that direction are always heard and honored. And that as we go through this process of being awake and being asleep, we are thankful for those moments when we are awake again, when we are aware again. And when we do that, or as we do that, we create more and more room for gratitude, for love, for compassion. And especially for being grateful for being here with one another. I'm going to begin on page 328, which is a bit of an overlap from last week, but I think it expands the continuity that we are looking for. Unless anybody has anything they want to add before we get started. John?
Daughter Connie wants to say hello to you. I saw her last night.
What was that again?
Connie Poole.
Connie Poole.
Oh, okay.
And question or observation I have is last week we talked about being aligned with the unconditional love of God. And what happens to me is I think I got it, and then when somebody else shows up, and I say, no, that can't be. And then I got to start over again. Tell me about situation.
Okay. John was mentioning that, there are certainly times in our lives when we connect with that sense of oneness with the divine. And then someone or something comes along and all of a sudden, poof. It's like in Buddhism, there's a school called the Mahayana, which is sometimes translated as being the big boat or the great vessel. And the philosophy behind that sect in Buddhism is that the boat doesn't leave until everybody's on it. And you don't get to choose who you sit next to. Because who is, in other words, everybody might still have their mask or their disguise of their personality and their ego, but we realize that's not who they are because we realize that's not who we are either. However, when we're here on planet Earth, it's really easy to be in that, first of all, that state of oneness, that state of awareness. And then all of a sudden, somebody comes along and says, and does something or says something, and bam, we're right back in that cult of personality again. And I just think that's part of the trip, John. I don't think there's anything wrong with that or anything bad about that. I think it's from my experience anyway, and my experience is rather limited. But what I'm sensing right now is that we are going to be going through periods of awakening or and falling asleep, or being aware and being unaware. That's just pretty natural. The choice we have is let's suppose you're in the big boat, John, and everybody's on board, or you think everybody is, and then so and so wants to get on the through the gate. You go, oh, everybody can be here, but not you. Once I realize that that's going on in my mind or in my consciousness, I can stop for a minute and say, is that really what I want? Am I buying into somebody's disguise, who they think they are, who I think they are, or am I really buying into the truth of who they are? And when I realize that I'm buying into the disguise, actually, it's what's kind of interesting is that the ego and the personality, all that they see are other egos and other personalities. So I know I'm getting lost in the cult of personality or ego consciousness when that's all I see, because that's how I'm seeing it. That's how I'm seeing you, or that's how I'm seeing the people around me. I'm not saying that we need to. The law of love says to love your neighbor. It doesn't say love your neighbor's disguise, or love your neighbor's personality, or love your neighbor's ego. It doesn't say that, because in your ego can't love. Your ego's going to have a very difficult time with some other egos. That's just the way it is. But on a spiritual level, on a soul level, what we are being asked to do is, Lord, that I may see. May I see you as God sees you. May I see you as the consciousness that I know you truly are. And even though that for me anyway, that doesn't magically change things. I'm still struggling with that one. I can flip on them. I had this fantasy. Imagine what it would be like to watch the news and to see everyone that flashes up on the screen as being a unique expression of divine consciousness. Everybody, the ones you like and the ones you don't like. I don't know about you, but it'd take me about 20 seconds to get turned off on that and to get lost in the cult of personality again. So what I'm suggesting is, and this is just my stuff, I'm suggesting to myself, don't get too down on yourself because you forget. Don't get too down on yourself because you're kicking somebody off the boat. Don't get too down on yourself because you've fallen into judgmentalness. Be grateful that you realize you've fallen into judgmentalness and you can see that differently. And again, it might not be a drastic, big, huge revelation all of a sudden. Ah. But it might be just touching the desire of your heart. I desire to see you differently. And I am open to the possibility of seeing you beyond your ego and beyond your personality. And I don't know when the reality of that's going to show up. Because right now, every time I see that particular face on the screen, and I don't expect that to change tomorrow. However, what can change is, instead of buying into my outrage and into my anger and into my revenge or my fear, I can say, I could see peace instead of this. I could see you as you truly are. I'm not able to yet. I could see you as a reflection of divine consciousness. I'm not there yet, or I don't perceive myself as being there yet, but I desire. And I am opening myself up to that possibility. That's what I'm working on right now. Maybe this lifetime, maybe a couple more. And maybe not. Yes. I know that's good stuff. We want to record that, right? Don't let that go by the wayside.
Jerry.
Yes. Hey, John.
So, hi. So I want to talk about something that I think is relevant to what you were just talking about. I think that we all go through periods in our lives that are challenging. And I think that we have chosen to go through those. I also think that we can choose our response. And I'm aware of something that just happened this week. There was a guy who had killed someone on a subway in New York City by strangling him. And the jury, if I understand this correctly, was deadlocked. And the judge gave them orders on how to think about it and then gave them time to think about it. And they were still deadlocked. And so he's going to probably be retried in a different way. In the last year, I have been providing services. I guess it's more than a year, maybe it's 2 years. I've been providing services to someone who went on trial for murder. And this was a person who was, in order to save money, he was writing a lot of stuff, handwriting, and then he had someone who would come and pick it up and digitize it and send it to me. And I have a way of transforming the handwriting into type. And then I would do that to the best of my ability, and I would send it back, and he would give that to his attorney. And that was a, but the eye-opening experience of what it's like to be in prison, because I got to know him, of all the stuff that was going on. And then in his trial, he was, the jury was deadlocked. And the judge said, "You guys can't go home until you come to a verdict. I won't take a deadlock." And he was convicted. Now he's going to appeal, and I'm going to continue to provide services to him. But I think that, in a way, I think he chose that at a certain level. And I've seen him change over the last couple years, incredibly. But I wanted to bring that up partly because just this morning I saw that John Grisham has a new book out, and is case studies of people who have been wrongly convicted in the United States. And he's written about this many, many times. I love to read John Grisham, but he's written about this many, many times. And he provided a quote one time that said 30% of the people who are on death row were falsely convicted. They are innocent. That's an estimate. And so we all go through some challenging things. Some of us choose more challenging circumstances than others, and it's okay. But we, I think it's an opportunity for us to choose a response that helps us to change who we are or what level we're on or however you want to talk about that. But we do that when we pick up one of these books. We do that in all so many different ways,
You're
but we
John,
choose
your
our
voice is
thoughts.
fading out a little bit.
Okay, well, I'm done anyway. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm reminded of, remember Ram Dass was talking one time about doing prison work. And he would do some actually group therapy with these people who are on death row. And he said what was really fascinating about that work was that the energy that of the death row people there in a group setting was very similar to what he would find in Tibetan Buddhist monastery. Because all of these people were living exactly in the present moment. That was all they had, and they knew that's all they had. And they were right there, present to him and to one another in a way that would not have been possible if they were, let's say, in general population or some other place like that. So the circumstances, he said it was kind of circumstantial because once they got off the death row experience, they went right back to being a sociopath. But during that time when they were in that place in that time where there was only the present moment, There's a very, very different focus and a very, very different sense of reality. The way the Course in Miracles puts it very simply is, I could see peace instead of this. Now, I don't always, that might be my desire, but I might not see peace right away. What happens to me is when I say that to myself, when I come to that place of, let's say, judgment or outrage or whatever it might happen to be, and I say to myself or remember to say to myself, I could see peace instead of this. It doesn't mean all of a sudden I'm going to be enshrouded in peace. Sometimes that might happen, but not often. Right? What's going to happen is I'm going to be on the edge of that choice John was talking about, making that choice again and again and again and again and again, depending upon the circumstances, is going to depend on how deeply that choice is going to take hold. But I'm going to have to do, it's not a one-shot deal. I might have to do that again and again and again and again. And this
Hey,
is going to
Jerry.
fit in exactly with what we're talking about, I think.
Hey,
Morning,
Jerry.
Joe.
Good morning. Just quickly.
Hang on a second.
Okay.
I need, I've been having some volume problems here. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say what you just shared, and also I really appreciate what John said, response. Absolutely. But what you just shared almost sounded like a public service announcement for going within, meditating. In other words, getting away from that which is distracting me from this or that, to go within to block that out. So I just wanted to share that. Thank you, man.
Thanks, Jim. I notice you have a different background.
Yeah.
Not the Golden Gate Bridge anymore. It's kind of, you got sort of grassy jungle-like stuff around you. Looks good. Now, the soul you see, that aspect of you that holds all the requirements for your evolution, your soul, your spirit, your spiritual energy, holds all of the requirements for your evolution. It's already there. You've already sealed that. You've already opened yourself up to that. Has begun to sing. And the song it sings is its invincibility to all things. In other words, it can never be taken away. The soul as you know it, the divine as you within the soul, cannot be destroyed by anything. Paul says in his epistle to the Romans, I tell you now, nothing, absolutely nothing can separate you from the love of God. Not your past, not your future, not your fears, not your worries, what you did, what you didn't do. Absolutely nothing can separate you from God's love. Nothing. Now, as the Creator has gifted each of you with being, your creative energy, your response is to sing its praise. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I added that. Now, here is the song of being. I am here. I am present. I am completely present to you and to one another in this moment. And the requirements for you now as the vessel of the Creator is to sing all the time. I am here. Where are you? I am here. Now, a song, you see, is an emanation of giving forth, flow of energy, not to you and through you. It is your vibration in the field you hold that is in concert with the fields of all that you see. Whatever is going on in here gets projected out there. So if I'm seeing war and horribleness and chaos, guess where that's coming from? If you see it out there, it's coming from in here. It's like you are a projector, and the world outside of you is the screen. And whatever gets projected on the screen is coming from inside of you. So if it's war and horror and terribleness, that's what you see out there, the original place where that's coming from is right in here. I know that's a difficult thing to grasp because it makes me feel very, very comfortable, but it's true. If it's happening in here, if I see it out there, it's happening in here. So that's where the correction lies. That's where the changes lie. That's where the energy of healing takes place. The exchange you make is that Christ itself is the alignment to the highest level of vibration that you can attend to. Underline can. At the stage of evolution you have come to. Yes, you may learn a language and be able to operate with the language in a new country. And for some of you, you have a way now to be expressed as the divine self that will be in consort to you and with you as you require it. In this moment of time, are you a reflection of divine consciousness? You might not have been thinking about it, but are you? And of course, the answer is always going to be yes. You might not be consciously aware of it, but the answer to that question is always going to be yes. Now, we have a choice. It's like kind of like turning on a faucet of how much of that energy am I going to allow flowing through me. It's easy to do that on Sunday morning. Kind of like turn the faucet on, just kind of let it flow. It's cool. You walk out the door. Somebody's fiddling around with the kind of turning the faucet down a little bit. Or let's say another Ram Dass statement. He said, if you want to know if you're enlightened, spend a weekend with your family. And I say that lovingly, but it's also true sometimes, okay? How did somebody put it? Your job is unconditional love. Everybody else's job is to push your buttons. And you know what? They're doing a really good job of that. Your job is unconditional love. Everybody else's job is pushing your buttons. And the ones who are closest to us sometimes are the ones who can push our buttons the most. I can remember I had been a number of years in recovery. I had been through codependency training, adult children, healing my inner child, done all of this stuff. And I could go home and be around my father, who was still drinking at that time, for about 5 minutes, and I'd be walking up the wall. I would be angry and angry as hell. I would be totally screwed up with all of this. And I would come walking into this experience, you know, feeling very sacred and very holy and very nice and very healed and very, very centered and very grounded. And in 5 minutes, I would be walking up a wall. He just had this ability to push every button that was available and finding something that I didn't even think were available yet. My job is unconditional love. Your job, push my buttons. But as you continue to speak the language, you become fluent and you begin to understand how fully you may be expressed in song. Here we go. The alignment I now hold calls me forward in joy. How often I forget that one. Got to grit my teeth and get myself through it. I can do this through joy or I can do this through pain. The alignment I now hold calls me forward in victory. And the alignment I now hold is my name. I am, I am, I am. Sam, I am. Little did he know he was quoting some spiritual being of green eggs and ham. I don't like green eggs and ham. Sam, I am. I am. What else are you? I am a reflection of divine consciousness. Now I can either be conscious of that or not. The guides go on to say, we rejoice with you today because we understand that where you have come to is a name that could not be held by you in prior utterance of this text and your willingness to speak it. In other words, you come a long way, baby. You might not think that. Your ego might question that. But the stuff I just read a moment ago, you might not have understood at all 6 months ago. And now, at least there's a little bit of daylight, there's a little bit of a window opening, a little bit of a doorway. It's almost like, ah, I don't get that all the time, but I understand that. And I know for me that's true. So at least some of the time, I can make that my truth. I can be living in that truth. The requirement of the text has been your journey. And the journey up the mountain, which will continue for the remainder of your life, will be resumed in the next chapter. We have some things to tell you now about what you may need to know in your expression. The ego and the personality is always looking for the finish line. Am I done yet? Have I learned everything I'm supposed to learn? Richard Bach, in his book Illusions, put it this way. If you want to know if your trip on planet Earth is finished, if you're still here, it isn't. It's a really good thing to remember once in a while. And there is no there's no finish line. There's no getting to the Is there getting an end to growth? How much is enough unconditional love? The man you are has known himself through things, ways of being, circumstances in your life. The woman you are has decided things that were brought into manifestation that she can see and now must attend to in a new way. In other words, I'm not just stuck with the circumstances of my life. I can see these things differently. I can choose to see them differently. The choice that I make might not change everything right away, but I do have the ability to see things differently, and I know that I'm open to that possibility. I have the ability to see myself differently. Might not happen right away, but it's still there. We have described in a point to you the methodology of lifting things through perception. I can see this differently. I can see this through the lens of my anger or my outrage. I can see this through the lens of unconditional love. That's my choice. We will not be redundant here, but we will tell you that the life you live will begin to transform through the speaking of your name, I am. When Moses asked Yahweh, "What should we call you?" He said, "I am. I am that I am." The only difference between, I was going to say God and you, but language kind of breaks down here. The only difference between what we call God and you is that God was not created. God was always was. You are created, but you are created from this. Ideas never leave their source. If it's true, wonderful expression in Course in Miracles, you are an idea in the mind of God. I love that, man. You are an idea in the mind of God. So is everybody else, by the way. You are an idea in the mind of God. And nothing can change that. The life that you live will begin to transform through the speaking of your name, I am. As somebody once said, be very, very careful about what you put after I am. Because those are the words of creation. I'm sick. I'm depressed. Maybe you are. But as soon as I say that out loud, or as soon as I even think that, I am reinforcing the energy of that downward spiral. I am experiencing depression, yes, and I could see that differently, but that's not who I am. The requirement for this and the choice of the name is the embodiment of the divine. And the divine will hold no shame, will hold no fear, will not argue with that of lower nature for the simple reason that she has no need to win. I don't need to allow my higher nature to fight my lower nature, to beat it up on it. Get out of here. To beat up my ego and my personality. Because the divine consciousness has no desire to win. It's not a game. It's not a duality. It's not one way or the other. I don't have to beat you up to control you. In fact, what we found out through this book and other books like this is that it's the job or part of the duty of the higher consciousness to embrace the lower consciousness and to allow it to rise up in energy. So instead of becoming the enemy or something that I'm working against or something that's working against me, instead of that, eventually what happens is it becomes the lens through which the divine light shines through. My personality and my ego become the lens through which the divine light shines through. It's a unique expression of divine consciousness. Doesn't go away. I don't have to beat up. I don't have to throw it away. I don't have to make it bad. I don't have to make it into a judgment. It's just there. And it's part of that unique expression of divine consciousness that I am. You understand, yes, that the presence of the Creator is everywhere in everything, and consequently does not need to prove itself. So consequently, as you agree to be in this regard, in this vehicle you have chosen to be the Creator, and you have no need to defend what you are. I am a unique child of God. I am a unique expression of divine love. And I offer no explanation for that, no apologies for that. It simply is the truth of who I am, is the truth of who you are. Will I forget that? Probably. Will I remember again? Yes. And here's another choice I have. When I've forgotten who I am, and then I remember again, I can be grateful for remembering again, rather than beating myself up for forgetting. To me, that's one of the most important lessons that I'm learning at this particular point in my life. Okay. That I can be grateful for remembering, and I don't have to beat myself up for forgetting. Here is an important teaching. The need to defend an identity is paramount to agreeing that the right to be can be shaken. In other words, my identity is not my ego and not my personality. My identity is the truth of who I am. And the truth of who I am can never be taken away, can never be shaken, can never be changed. I love you with an everlasting love. I cannot love you any more than I love you in this moment. The right to be, at an essence level, is the gift of the Creator, is never changed. The true identity you hold does not wear lipstick, does not have a job title, does not defend anything, because she is not that person that has a name that can be countered. She's not her personality and not her ego. Whatever happens to you in your journey, know it or not, will lead you forward in your journey to home. There are no backward steps in the spiritual path. There's no two steps forward and one step backward. It might feel that way, but there's no backward steps to any growth we have. It's always moving forward. It's always growing. It's always evolving. It's always producing positive energy rather than negative. Whatever happens to you in your journey, know it or not, will lead you forward in your journey to home. Now, what is the journey to home? Ram Dass said, we're all walking one another home. What does that mean? Where are we going? The journey to home, to the divine in union, is where we will take you in subsequent texts. But the reunification of the divine self as you in mastery is what we attend to now in its completeness. Course in Miracles has a an image of Jesus, the Christ consciousness, standing at a doorway. And at the other side of the doorway is what Buddhists or Hindus might call nirvana, or what Christians might call oneness with the Father, oneness with God, complete and total oneness. And Jesus, the Christ consciousness, is standing at the door. Says, I already know what it's like to be one with the Father. And I can go into that energy anytime that I choose. Where personality and ego just kind of almost disappear. There's no separate identity. I and the Father are one, he said. But I'm not going to do that yet. Even though I have the capacity to do that, I am standing, leaving the door open. And I am not walking through this doorway to be one with the Father until everybody else gets through. The boat doesn't leave, as the Buddhists say, until everybody's on it. I am not walking through this doorway until everybody else has the opportunity and does walk through. That's my promise to you. The journey to home, to divine and union, is where we will take you in subsequent texts. But the reunification of the divine self as you in mastery is what we attend to now in its completeness. As we are the way showers, this is the guide speaking. As we are the way showers, we must at times create the possibility that what stands in the way of the journey must be moved aside. In other words, sometimes there's work to do. Sometimes there are boulders in the road that we might either need to blow up, move aside, or find some ways of walking over. The first on the path, as we have said, must encounter the obstacles that will be attended to as the ones behind you seek to move forward. That's a real interesting one. There are people in our lives who have kind of cleared the way for us to move forward. I'm thinking about, let's say, people in recovery in AA, Al-Anon, NA, GA, whatever AA thing you might be working on. People in recovery. Are able to move through the process because others have moved through the process. I don't want to say this out loud and get the words correct. I don't want this to sound too confusing, but I'll mention it anyway. We're talking about energy here, energy and movement. In physics, and metaphysics, there is something called a morphogenetic field, which is an energy field which sometimes is really difficult to break through. But once it is broken through, it is much easier for people to move through it. For instance, in track and field, there was something called a 4-minute mile that was considered to be a barrier that was impossible to break. For years, people would get close but never quite make it. And then at one point, probably about, thinking maybe probably about 70 years or so ago, Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile. It was 3 minutes and 59 seconds and 59 and a half seconds, but he did it. And what happened after Roger Bannister moved through that morphogenetic field is that everybody started, not everybody, but a lot of people started doing it. It became much easier once that field was broken through. That's the whole part of the whole message of Jesus in the Christ consciousness. I have come here to move through this field. I've come here to move through the field that you, where you think death is the end of things. I've come here to say that's not. In fact, I have conquered. I have moved through death. I have broken through that field to clear the way. John the Baptist said his job was to make the rough ways smooth and the crooked ways straight. I have come here to work through that energy field so it is easier for you to accomplish. The people who have come before us, spiritually speaking, have made the way a little bit smoother for us to go through and to move through. And we are doing the same thing for the people who are, quote, behind us. We don't, might not even know who they are. But the work that you do on yourself, the work that you do for yourself, as yourself, is a way of paving the way for those who are behind you, those whom
Hey,
you love.
Jerry,
Jim.
quickly, perhaps, just perhaps, Jesus was a great example as opposed to the great exception.
What was that again, Jim?
Perhaps Jesus was the great example for us as opposed to the great exception.
Oh, very definitely. The great example instead of the great exception. Well put. I never heard it put that way before, but that's great. I like that. I'm going to need to do a little meditation here. And I'll do a longer meditation on our recording. But I just noticed the time is jumping away and I got to do double duty today. I'm going to ask you to put your stuff down, if you don't mind. Let yourself get comfortable. Feel like I've just run a 4-minute mile, which is okay. Close your eyes if you like. Breathe. And choose one thing in your life right now that you would like to be grateful for. Just let it come to you. For me right now, the first thing I thought of was my grandson, Finn. Could be a person in your life, could be an event in your life, doesn't matter. And allow yourself to just absorb and be absorbed in that energy of gratitude. Kind of breathe it into your being. Soak it up like a sponge. What's fascinating about that is you can't be grateful and annoyed at the same time. Gratitude can encompass everyone and everything. Deep breath, stretch a bit. Thanks for letting me pontificate this morning. I hope this was a useful session. I know it was for me.
Absolutely.
Hope you have a great week.
You too.
Take good care of
Thanks,
yourselves.
Jerry.
Take care of one another. And
Always perfect, Jerry.
thank you,
love you
Jerry.
guys.
Thank you, Jerry.
Love you.
Thank you. Thanks, Jerry. Thanks,
Thank you,
everyone.
guys.
Love you all.
Thanks, Jerry.
Love you all.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you all.
Thank you.